Welcome to the Monkey House. It's me here in the year 2024, and I'm about to be in Sydney and Brisbane. Sydney from the 8th to the 12th of May, Brisbane from the 16th to the 19th of May, doing my show Dryer Dryer at the respective comedy festivals in those cities. But I'm also, while I'm up there, I figured I had a couple of days to kill, so I'm doing a Who Knew It with Matt Stewart on Monday, the 13th of May at the Chippendale Hotel, and in Brisbane at Good Chat Comedy on the 14th of May. And you can get tickets for all of that. Now, go to mattstewartcomedy.com for the links. mattstewartcomedy.com. Now, on with the show.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome to Primates, the podcast where we go through primates and popular culture from Chimpan A all the way down to Chimpan Z. This week, welcoming into the Monkey House two very special guests. I've got the head honcho of Planet Broadcasting and also host of Just Make the Thing. It's Claire Tonti.
Hello, everyone. It is great to be here on this illustrious occasion where we are recording a podcast about primates.
I've also got in the Monkey House, co-host of the Millennial Divide, it's Dimity Kirkwood.
Hello. I'm so excited for finally getting the opportunity to be able to tell all of my monkey anecdotes.
You've
and
got a lot.
Apes and other chimpanzees and lots of,
yeah, they're not inclusive. The same thing. Be inclusive.
Not the same thing. I just learned.
Well, look, you're going to learn a lot here today because this is, it's a safe space, but it's an educational space for primates. Of course, you are a primate too. And you got to learn about your brethren and sisterin in the primate.
I have a lot to learn.
You do have a lot to learn. So, you know, buckle up. Buckle up. Do you have a favorite primate? We normally ask first-time guests in the Monkey House, and you are first-time in. I'm trying to sporadically try and get Monkey House up as a thing.
Oh, okay. I reckon this is the Monkey House.
I remember to say it every month or so.
Okay, I'll try and slip it in.
I'll go real hard when I do remember, though.
Sure.
Monkey House. Welcome to the Monkey House. Do you have a favorite primate now that you're in the Monkey House you want to talk about?
Coming from a perspective in the Monkey House, seeing what I did.
That was pretty good.
I'm helping.
Thank you.
So I really like, and we just talked about this before. I don't know how to say it either. Orangutans.
Forest man.
Yes, the orange ones. They are so cool and so clever, and there are so many interesting facts about orangutans that I can't remember, but my brother could tell you. He used to work at the Melbourne Zoo, so he could if you were interested in hearing some, you should talk to him. I can't tell you any, but they are just really fun.
They are fun.
Yeah, and I think that's why I like them.
I watched a doco, which we talked about about a month back, and there was – they showed an orangutan making like its own sort of portable hut. It was like a big sort of umbrella hat almost. Real cool.
What?
Wow. Yeah.
And it just took it around.
Yeah.
Wherever it would like to do that myself because I can't afford to buy property.
Yeah.
But I do need a roof over my head.
Well, that's the millennial divide.
That's what it's all about.
You can eat smashed avocado and build your own hut.
I can really have it all.
Exactly.
What, do you remember what you said your favourite primate was?
I reckon I said it was orangutan as well.
No way.
I reckon it's the most
popular. That's why we get on so well.
I know. I also like orangutans because of King Louis from The Jungle Book. Who was an orangutan, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Correct, yeah, because I like the song. He's the king of the swingers. Oh, the monkey
kind of
VIP.
Scared me, I think. I don't think I liked him.
I just liked
him. Was he scary?
He was a bit of a bad dude.
He was
a bad dude, but he had some sweet, sweet music. And I really fell for it.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
You were just more brave than me. True.
I'm scared.
Yeah. Yeah. True. However, I have changed my tune with my favorite monkey because I've been doing a lot of zoo visits recently with my 3-year old and I really love the spider monkeys now.
Yeah.
They're really
the spider monkeys.
Yeah. They're really cool.
They're nifty, aren't they?
Yeah. They're nimble.
Nimble.
Yeah, they've got those tails that like wrap around everything and they can climb up things with their tail. Mm. And I was watching them at zoo super closely and their tail can wrap around like it's like having an extra arm. So you're like eating your lunch and this like monkey was eating its lunch and then can just scratch its head with its tail. Oh, like how useful would that be?
If only.
Be real handy. You know, we've devolved, haven't we?
We really have.
They say we've evolved, but that's BS.
Correct.
Sorry for the language. Yeah. It will get a bit filthy in here in the monkey house.
Yeah, good correct. There's a lot of like monkey business in this monkey house.
A lot of S exclamation mark asterisk thrown in the monkey
house.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Verbal.
Yeah.
Shit. Oh, no, sorry about that.
Edit that out.
I know.
Might also bring up the bleep going for that. Anyhow, Claire, your second time in, and you're sort of our expert, classic Disney movie expert. Mm. I've put your sandwich there, expert at the start and the end of your title, which is, you know, quite an honor, I would assume.
I'm very honored. I feel it's the best way to be.
Mm. Expert sandwich.
Correct. Yes, I am the expert Disney sandwich.
Last time we talked about the final movie in the Disney Renaissance. Tarzan. And now we're talking one right in the meat of the Renaissance. The Lion King.
The Renaissance.
Renaissance.
Yes, the Lion King, the king of the Disney films, as I would like to call it.
Right. So is it, I was going to ask you later, how do you rank it compared to Tarzan? But you've got it up number one.
Oh, mate, it's number one.
It's got to be number one.
It's got to be number one.
No one could disagree with that.
Correct.
I don't think that's controversial.
I haven't seen them all, but yeah, it feels...
I think I might have.
Of the queue I've seen, it's right up there.
Mm. Oh, look.
And they all do seem to have primates. Aladdin's got a monkey, I'm pretty sure. We're going to work our way through all of them.
Yeah, cool.
As long as they've got a bloody primate in them.
Not interested otherwise. Yeah. I'm not going to watch a movie ever again if it doesn't have a primate in it. I've learned.
And I'm not talking about humans.
No.
Not, they're the most boring primate. No, I'm talking about fair dinkum. Subhuman or whatever the opposite.
I know.
What's the opposite of sub?
What's better than?
Better than human.
Better than human. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Exactly. The pinnacle, shall we say, of the primate world.
Slip of the tongue.
I know. Oh, awkward. Well, yes, Abu from Aladdin is a classic character, the monkey in Aladdin. Mm. You should definitely do that film. But we are talking today about The Lion King.
Yes.
My favourite.
So it came out in 1994. I was just a boy. Were you alive?
I was alive.
You would have just snuck in.
This feels like my podcast all over again, getting shade thrown at me for being the youngest. I was a very mature 3-year-old. Thank you very much.
Do you remember seeing it? When was the first time you saw it?
I do remember seeing it. I don't know. I feel like I saw it in the movies, but I also could be projecting another sibling's memory onto my own, which happens a lot. So I don't know. But early. Yeah. Everyone was showing it in utero, weren't they?
When you were a twinkle in your dad's eye, you still knew about The Lion King.
Absolutely.
Because it has all the classic themes, and I don't want to do your job for you, Matt, so I won't go through it. I'll let you do that. However, it has all the classic themes.
Well,
it makes you cry, it's based
on King Lear, isn't it? King Lear? King
Hamlet?
Hamlet.
Hamlet.
King, the Hamlet.
Yes. Which I think of as the king of the Shakespeare plays. And that's what he specialised in mainly was plays.
And I like that they were like, this is a good play. What could be made better?
Yeah.
More primates.
More primates. Yeah. And could we draw this? Because I'm sick of seeing these shitty human primates. You know, flapping about on stage. Let's get there's some illustrated
animation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct.
I think realistically though, something they've probably got a little wrong is the king, obviously, of the animal kingdom is gotta be a primate. So it's weird that they chose a lion for the role in this case.
Mm. Oh, the namesake of the movie.
I know. Yeah. Bold choice. And also because, as I discovered, because I have a son who is super into animals. The lion, and particularly the male lion, is super lazy and does nothing and is a bit of a scavenger. So the female lions do everything. They do, well,
goodness, it sounds like society. No, but they do all of the hunting and the male lion will come in and usually only if a thing's already been killed. So he doesn't often even do the killing himself. I know.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Sounds about right, am yeah, I right,
Claire? Exactly. Look, he's no spider monkey.
No, certainly not.
I know.
It's a very egalitarian system in the spider monkey community, I hear.
Correct, correct. However, the lion, I have to say, the mountain lion is a very handsome animal. Would you agree?
I'm a Mufasa. Please.
No.
Stop it.
I know, grown-up Simba. No, I think Mufasa would be hotter than Simba.
Yeah, 100%. Mufasa's yeah. got wisdom and age. And
yeah, I know. That's the have? Booming voice.
Oh, my God. Just makes you sit down and listen, doesn't it?
It does, correct. They, correct.
They are, I think it's pretty common in the animal kingdom for the males to be the beautiful ones, all right? The peacocks and yeah. other, a lot of birds. They're normally the... The fancy looking ones are the dudes.
To attract the mates. I'm doing Why a little
dance.
Why are
we dance. The ones wearing
see.
All the makeup then?
Yeah, I know. It's very confusing.
It's very confusing.
I know because the bowerbirds, isn't the bowerbird like you always see them on National Geographic and they're all doing a dance with like things like a shiny nest.
Yeah, they get all the blue the stuff, right? They're the ones that steal all blue stuff.
And like shiny things. And they're the dudes
That's
going
funny.
Out there.
Anytime when in my single days when I went out with my friends, we used to call it like guys were peacocking when they came up to us and they were like shaking their feathers and being all gross, you know.
Shaking their fellas? Just shaking their feathers around.
Shaking their feathers, yeah. Shaking their feathers, like, and just being gross. It's like, oh, peacocking.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it? But yet we wear the shiny things. But I do like shiny things.
I want to. So maybe that is equality in a weird way.
True.
We've taken it back.
We have.
So fight the good fight.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We're like fighting the fight of the female bowerbird.
Yes. The bamboos as well are the men, the one that have the
Did you the just color? Say bamboos?
Bamboos.
In the male.
I was already three. I was like at my end point being like, do baboons have, they all have red asses or just the men?
Look, you're asking, obviously I'm a
you are an
amateur primatologist, and I'm going to say, sure.
Okay.
That sounds convincing. I'm convinced they all have red bums.
All of them?
I don't know. Matt just said yes, and he's the
expert. I feel like it is the males.
The
but
men.
I don't,
I'm going to look this up.
You look that up while I give a breakdown of the story of The Lion King from IMDb user Blazer346.
Wow. Yeah. Incredible.
A lot of people will follow Blazer's work here. Here's how he broke down the movie. After being anointed as the next king of the jungle, which is not true because they don't live in a jungle. Anyway, I should have probably fact checked this before.
You're probably getting to this, but the first version of The Lion King was called The King of the Jungle.
That's right. I think then they maybe realized that it's not a jungle.
No, they don't live
king
in the jungle.
King of the savannah.
Yes.
Savannah?
Savannah.
Savannah.
Savannah. One of those.
After being anointed as the next king of the savannah, young lion cub Simba is every bit as eager to take his proud father Mufasa's place as the king. However, this makes Simba's villainous uncle Scar jealous of him. But when Mufasa is suddenly murdered by Scar, Simba feels responsible for his death and runs away from home. Meeting up with two outcasts named Timon and Pumbaa, Simba embraces their ways of Hakuna Matata. Years later, approached by his childhood friend Nala, and the wise baboon Rafiki, Simba must return home to stop Scar's evil reign and fulfill his destiny as the new king. That's the whole. I mean, it goes for an hour and a half, but that's it. I just knocked it off in 2 minutes.
Oh my god! Why would you even bother watching it?
You
now?
Probably don't need to.
I got the highs, I got the lows, I got it all.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
That.
And and if you haven't seen it, all the spoilers are done.
Yeah.
Oh, why? You deserve to have them spoiled if you haven't watched it yet. No.
Yeah, true. That is very,
it's
very
your
true.
Fault, listener.
Correct, correct.
I watched it last night again. I first watched it, I went and saw it at the cinemas for my birthday with my friend Damon. He gave me a block of Cadbury hazelnut chocolate and we went and watched that film. And it was a great night. It stuck with me all these years later.
Correct. And it's very specific. You have a very good memory for snacks.
Do you have some, for some things like that? Yeah, snacks. I'm obviously a big snack guy. but yeah, I reckon I found it sad in parts back then, but I don't think I got it all as much. And I last night I cried three different times. And I reckon as a kid I remember vividly feeling, you know, obviously I was a boy, so I wasn't allowed to show it, but
yeah, because boys don't cry.
I'm the feminist of this podcast.
Oh, okay.
So I know now. I've changed my ways, but back then I didn't know, and I had to, you know, had to hold it in.
Yes,
hold it in. There's other kids around. You don't want to bloody show your weakness.
Yeah.
Last night I let it flow.
Yeah, it's
three or four tears at a time. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, what can you tell us? Which parts?
Yeah, the first one. It was something. It was when Mufasa was disciplining Simba for going off into the elephant graveyard.
Oh, that's
and just scary. The way he handled it was real.
Yeah,
it was real sweet or something, because it was like he was disciplining him, and then he's like, "Hey, you know, we're mates, aren't we?" And Simba goes, "We're mates, aren't we, Dad?" And he goes, "Yeah, we're mates, son." It was something about anyway. Yeah.
And we'll always be together, right?
Oh.
And then he goes all serious and look at the stars.
Oh.
The kings of the past look down on us from those stars.
I know, you have watched that, like, a lot of
mate,
this, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I've watched it so many times.
I think it's like part of it is just my parents are getting on, you know, they're into their 60s. And I think I'm just like associating more of it with life and death and how time.
I know the second part when you cried, and it's obviously, spoiler alert, when Mufasa dies.
Yes.
And then Simba is like on his body and he's like, Dad?
Yeah, that bit was full on. Oh, man. I don't remember it. It lasts for ages.
Yeah, it does.
Often in the Disney, they won't show the dead body, but they really.
No, they let it rip.
It's so full on. I know. Because you even see him falling to his death and you see Simba going, Dad! Oh my God. And then the wildebeest kind of scuffles through the gorge. And there's like that entire scene is incredible. Like the tech that went into that, they were so ahead of their time with the way the wildebeests ran. And I mean, it's very technical, but in the way that they even drew all the wildebeests and created them to kind of merge, and the 3D imaging that they did with the animation had never been done before. So the scope of that scene, you really feel the weight of those wildebeests just running through. And then it's so dramatic, and the Hans Zimmer's like vocal score behind that. Oh, it's so heartbreaking. And then when it just goes silent.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he sees Dad, and then you see him, get up, Dad. Oh, mate, I'm going to cry.
Oh,
it's so heartbreaking. And they don't shy away from it.
No.
Like, there's a lot of scene of Mufasa's body there.
Yeah.
It's intense.
And it was, so Scar's the brother. So
correct.
And I guess apparently wasn't always going to be related. He was going to be an outsider from another.
Yeah, like a rival lion.
Yeah.
He was going to be like just like a challenger.
From outside the pride. But they ended up changing that. So he was basically, he was next in line until Simba was born. Mm. So that bumped him down a couple down the line, which so he came up with a plan to knock off the king and the next in line to bump him up to the new king.
Because he has that classic line, I was first in line until the little hairball was born. Mate, I've seen this movie way too much. I've really watched it way too much. But yeah, exactly right. And so he's this kind of really interesting character now so they thought that was more of an interesting storyline, I think, rather than him being a rival lion.
Yeah, I think they're right. They really nailed it, didn't they? I mean, every aspect of this movie, they really nailed it. Like, there's not one point where you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Is there any songs you don't like?
As a kid, I remember disliking Be Prepared.
Me too, but now I love it.
Yeah, I think it would have been just because it was sort of darker, and it was sort of, it wasn't, the rest of the movie was relatively fun apart from the super sad parts, but that bit was just a bit, you know.
Spooky.
Yeah, something about it I didn't like, but then last night I quite enjoyed it. But you'll be maybe disappointed to hear that it sounds like that's going to be cut from the remake.
With the Hitler, because there's the point where all the hyenas are in rows and they're doing the Heil Hitler kind of, what's that walk called?
The goose step.
The goose step.
Full on sort of Nazi imagery.
Yeah, it's interesting because my husband James's grandpa fought in World War II and flew planes. Oh, on our side. It's all right. He was a Nazi. No. Oh, I have a story to tell you about a Nazi box that's hidden in the middle of the Kimberleys one day, but I won't tell that story now. Yeah, I know.
Oh, what a teaser.
That is a huge tease.
Yeah. Or it's just, it's a very long tangent and it's not about the Lion King. It's in the middle of the Australian bush.
Could you work in a primate?
Maybe there's a primate in the middle of the Australian bush. You never know.
You never know.
No, but there is an army base up very, because I used to live in a community called Colombo, which is right up north, as far north as you can get before the coastline in East Timor of Australia. And up there, there's just a lot of remote bushland. And it's like an 8-hour drive of a really bad roads. And really the only way to get in is to fly during the wet season. But there's an army base up there that they used during the war, and it's still functioning now. But there is a whole lot of rumors that a Nazi plane crashed up there, and that there's like a Nazi box full of memorabilia. And the local Indigenous community up there say that they know where it is, but they won't tell the authorities, and it's a whole thing.
Was this the plot from Matthew McConaughey's Fool's Gold?
Yeah, it's exactly that. Exactly. But this is the true story.
Wow.
I know.
I didn't even realize it was based on. Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey appropriated it. Story.
I'm like, how did he come up with that? But yeah, makes sense he didn't.
Yeah,
stolen.
Exactly.
Classic.
Anyway,
McConaughey.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I actually do quite love Matthew McConaughey.
I think he's done a brilliant, so brilliant, you know, use of his career, really, hasn't he? He just like started and was like, oh yeah, I'll do the rom-coms. I'll do all those parts. And then was just like, haha, I've taken the reins.
And now I'm starving myself. Seriously. For film. Yeah, what was the true crime one he did, which was so excellent? Wasn't called True Crime. No, True Detective.
True Detective.
Oh, he's good in that.
Haven't watched it.
Yeah, I was going to do his voice, but I can't do an American accent. It's really bad. I'm Matthew McConaughey.
That's what he always says. It's weird. He can't pronounce Matthew. I'm Matthew McConaughey.
I'm starting to lose my mind. This is the second podcast we've done tonight. I'm losing my mind.
I'm actually a pitch perfect impersonator, and I don't always use these skills, but I can do a Matthew McConaughey if you like.
Yeah, right now.
All right.
Oh my God, Matthew, where are you?
That was really
you shouldn't
impressive.
Have closed your eyes. Oh. If you close your eyes while I'm doing one of my noises, you'll be very confused.
Okay, can you do Michael Caine?
Michael Caine, sure. Hello, I'm Michael Caine. Yeah, so
that's just good. A couple of, yeah. You're good at this.
Well, it's not good. It's great.
It is.
That was
it's
really.
Brilliant,
it is, though. That's a skill. That's a very special skill that you have.
Yeah.
You should do another spin-off podcast just with, like, accents and, like, you doing impersonations of people.
Okay.
Do me. Correct. Do my impersonation.
Okay. Oh, hello. I'm pretty good at having long feet.
Am I British?
I didn't know.
I'm actually British.
I'm pretty. Oh, look, that one was.
I'm a little bit British. You also move your head around a lot. I like to wobble my head and talk like that. It's actually spot
on. Is that feet thing? Is that private intel?
Mm, yeah, I didn't want to.
Because I can edit that bit out if you like.
All right. Well, now it's on here. Like I have long skinny feet. I have really, really long skinny feet.
We realized just before. We started recording that all three of us have long, skinny feet.
Yeah. No, Claire doesn't have long, skinny feet.
I've just got skinny feet, but I have nice, dainty feet.
Oh, okay.
Like a Disney princess.
Well, I've got long, skinny feet like Sideshow Bob.
Mm. Mm. Do you know? Yeah, me too. Do you know my sister, Amy, who's on the Millennial Divide podcast, shout out, said to me just the other week, she referred to my feet as clompers.
Clompers? That doesn't sound right.
What's she mean to me?
Clompers sounds like short and stubby, not long and skinny.
I specifically have my boots. She goes, are those your clompers, Dimity?
She's so mean to you. It's one of my favourite parts of your show. I think you should call them flappers.
Yeah, I was thinking flappers as well.
Yes, that would be all right.
Or flippers. Flappers or flippers.
Yeah, maybe flippers is what I was
going for. Flappers sounds like I'm a 50s kind of flapper. I like it.
Yeah, flapping around in the
30s.
30s? 20s?
20s.
20s, roaring
20s.
Tens.
Yep. Zeros.
Minuses.
Exactly. Where we were going before I brought up the Nazi box, then Matthew McConaughey, and then Michael Caine, and then your impression of Dimity.
Yes.
Which I feel like has been an amazing tangent.
Oh, hello. I have long feet.
Who's talking at the moment? Closer. Try and work it out.
That wasn't much closer. I feel like you really nailed that one.
Yeah, look, it takes me a while to hone in. I've watched hours of Matthew McConaughey. I've only listened to, less hours of Millennial Divide. There's only been 15 episodes. So, and you only do like 38-minute episode. So that's not enough. Not enough minutes and hours
right.
to study. And you don't even – you talk for maybe a third of the time.
I get overshadowed. We all know that.
If you could get a bloody word in. I mean, I've spoken of you three or four times in the last 5 minutes, so I think I can understand how that – yeah, well, I've just done it again. I'm so sorry about that. Just bloody – And I'm the feminist of the podcast too, yet I'm not, I mean, maybe you should lean in. Like, I don't know. Oh, my God. I hope everyone understands
the irony. It's my fault. That's right. Yeah. Yep. Claire, what were you saying?
Oh, yeah. So I was going to talk about, because we were talking about the goose stepping in the Scar scene, because this podcast is obviously about The Lion King, classic Disney film. And in that scene, they're goose stepping and James showed it to his 90-year-old grandfather who had fought in World War II.
And sorry, just once again, who did he fight for?
Not the Nazis.
Okay, sure.
The Nazis.
The other guys.
The good guys.
Us?
Yeah.
I guess. Mm. Yeah, he flew a plane. Oh. I think, yeah. So in that particular war, he flew a plane. I don't know why I'm talking like this. Anyway, so... this is going nowhere. It's not
it
even
wasn't
that
the
exciting.
Red
what happened? Tell
no,
us.
It wasn't the
was he the red? Oh
no,
my God.
That, this is not even that interesting.
Tell us.
Hey, James just showed him The Lion King and he thought it was very amusing that the hyenas were goose stepping.
Oh my God, Claire. I can't believe that's where we ended up.
I'm glad it was amusing. It wasn't like traumatizing or something.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought when James
and
told
he got
that story,
PTSD
it was going to be
flashbacks.
Yeah, exactly. But apparently, he just thought it was a very funny. Maybe because they won, it would have been less funny if they lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah,
that they won.
It probably wouldn't be in a movie like that as the bad guys doing it. It would have been Simba. Would have been goose stepping.
True. Everyone would have been goose stepping.
Oh, what a beautiful weird walk they're doing. You know, imagine that. Yeah. That other reality. Oh, imagine if we were in that other weird reality where everyone is walking with a goose step.
Oh,
everywhere.
Everywhere. Imagine.
Well, imagine. Oh, you guys would be in serious trouble with your flappy feet. Oh,
yeah.
No, we'd be nailing it. We'd be head of the pack.
Yeah.
Everyone would be like, look at them go. Like they're so, they get such high extension with their feet.
Mm.
It looks like my high kicks are like half a meter higher because my feet are so long.
Oh, cool. Okay.
It's all about illusion.
It's a big advantage.
Do you know that that song I like because it's got my favorite line in it, which is like, it's like all dark and dark and then it goes, a shiny new era is tiptoeing nearer. And where do we feature?
Just listen to teacher.
I love it.
Oh, it's so good.
How good is that bit?
It's so good. And is it now? The voice is Jeremy Irons.
It is. I was about to tell you about the casting. Do you want me to talk through the casting a little bit?
Yes.
So we'll... of the other characters. Nathan Lane, who ended up playing Timon, he went for Zazu, which ended up being played by Rowan Atkinson.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernie Sabella, who played Pumbaa, went in to audition for a hyena. So a lot of them got mixed around. Initially, they wanted Cheech and Chong for the hyenas. You know Cheech and Chong? They're like classic stoner comedians.
Yes, correct.
And Cheech Martin was available, but Tommy Chong wasn't. So Whoopi Goldberg ended up coming in as playing the other hyena. But for Scar, it was initially going to be Tim Curry, apparently. But he left the role to take a role in Home Alone 2, Lost in New York instead. Which feels in hindsight maybe a mistake. But, they must have been keen on Scar having an English accent, which is interesting because none of the other lions have an English accent. So why does the brother of Simba, a guy with a deep American accent?
Brother of Mufasa.
What did I say? Simba. Sorry, uncle of Simba.
Yeah,
Mufasa. Sorry, I'm so sorry about that. James Earl Jones, who played Mufasa.
God, that's just a bad one in every family, isn't there? My goodness.
Oh, no, terrible. Also,
do you have a Scar in your family?
They're both on the podcast, and so no.
couple of scars.
No, we're all perfect. Correct.
Oh, that's nice. All right. How lucky are you?
I know.
Well, I can't say it now.
No black sheep.
I think I might be, actually. I think it's me.
Okay. As an impartial observer, yes, it's you. No.
I suspect.
No,
I don't think
that. It was for comedy.
Yeah, I get it.
You know I don't think that, really.
No, it's funny.
Or do I?
Oh, you're the Scar. Ooh,
I am. I probably am in my family. No, there are no Scars. Well, there are probably deep-seated childhood Scars. But no one in particular as Scar.
I've never realised that. there's a meaning behind that name.
Yeah, he's got a scar over his eye, which is never explained.
No,
either.
But like actually he's scarred. Deep. He's got there's family scars.
Yeah, there's kind of a connotation, right, that like something's happened to him or he's not scarred, right.
Emotionally.
Yeah, emotionally and physically.
Yeah.
This whole movie has a lot of layers.
So many
layers, like a parfait.
Do you know what else I like? Another part is the start. I always thought that the lyrics were pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom. Pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom.
Imagine if they were the lyrics.
Imagine. Yeah. I mean, it's actually Swahili, I think.
It's just my like 3-year-old brain being like, I don't know. Pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom. Like it could, that's what it sounds like
legit,
to me. Like
legit.
I didn't know that other languages existed.
I feel like they've really made an error in not actually using those lyrics, to be honest.
That's still time. Maybe it's not out yet. The new one. The remake.
That's true.
Maybe we haven't even got there yet.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We haven't.
No.
Will we ever? Who knows?
Who knows?
So they ended up getting Jeremy Irons to play Scar.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't sure about it at first, but they ended up convincing him. And they even used some of his look in the drawing of Scar. So they sort of saw in Mr. Sunday Movies did a video about Lion King. Really coincidentally this week, because we were planning on doing this episode anyway, and then I hadn't even thought about how just coincidentally.
Yeah, timely, the new trailer for the movie's come out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Jeremy Irons got right into it, but I found that really fascinating, and I never picked it up as a kid, but he's got an English accent. So does, obviously, Zazu and Rowan Atkinson. But everyone else has got an American accent. So I found this article just before from DeseretNews.com titled, "Why Scar's British Accent in The Lion King Might Be a Bad Thing for Your Child."
Oh. Claire, listen.
I am. I'm listening.
Oh. And this is what it said. So it's quoting an article from The Atlantic. It says, cartoon villains often have foreign accents, and that might be sending a bad message to children. Sociolinguist Calvin Gidney, an associate professor in child study and human development at Tufts University, told The Atlantic that he was always struck by the villainous Scar's accent in The Lion King. Why was it different from Mufasa's voice when the two were supposed to be brothers? Gidney unmasked a disturbing pattern in film with villains often having foreign accents. Gidney, along with Julie Dobrow, a senior lecturer at Tufts, worked on a study that found most heroes have an American accent while villains tend to have British accents. Language issues like these can lead to children misunderstanding how to treat people with different accents. What's really important is to be able to make your children into media literate viewers, Dobrow said. If a parent or sibling or caregiver is there with a child watching television or a film, this can make anything into an educational experience. It's just a learning opportunity. That's interesting. They're sort of thinking that it's teaching kids from a young age to be fearful of people with different accents.
It's interesting you say this, actually, because a friend of mine who's gay said this too. He said that Scar actually has, well, like you would sort of think that he's probably quite an effeminate lion. I'm probably saying this wrong and I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone, but he seems like he'd be a member of the gay community, and there is a feeling among the LGBTQI community that he shouldn't be shaped as a villain, basically. Oh. And then it's interesting that and sometimes this can happen in film, that like villains can also, as men, can sometimes be effeminate in that way. I don't know.
Right. I did not pick that up at all.
No, I didn't either. But I rewatched it and I sort of saw, I mean, yeah, I did see what they were saying.
Yeah,
like
right.
You could think that. Mm. And he's kind of a lone figure. He doesn't have any female lines around him or anything like that.
It does seem like he's sort of the outcast. I just thought that was how, I mean, I'm a primatologist. I'm not a limatologist. So,
correct.
But I thought that was how it worked. The head of the lion clan is the alpha male, and they have heaps of lionesses, and all the other males are sort of outcasts. But I'm basing that off absolutely nothing.
No, but I think that's right too. I wonder whether Yeah, I don't know. It was just something mentioned to me in passing.
When it comes to Scar Brains, he got the lion's share. But when it came to Brawn, he was at the shallow end of the gene pool.
Hey, you know the words like me. I'm so impressed.
I just Googled, like, who is Scar? Scar, an archetypal evil uncle sort who conspires to take the throne. So, yeah, they say, why do people think he's gay? Scar is clever, camp, more than a little snide, and posh and British. Because of these traits, some people think he's probably gay.
Interesting.
Or at least conforming to a bitchy old queen gay stereotype.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what my friend was saying.
And Englishness plays into that as well. Because I thought it made sense to me in some ways that an American film would have the English as a baddie, because, I mean, they had a history of
fighting for independence
the British. So maybe that made some sense. It just seemed weird that it happened inside the same family, because that doesn't really make
sense. And it's
apart from the fact that the character started out as being from outside the family, and that was a change in the script, or at least at some point during development that he was brought into the family.
I wonder if it's like an unconscious social thing at the time, because they were actually at the same time as they were writing The Lion King, they were also writing Pocahontas, another Disney opus. And actually Pocahontas was supposed to be the movie that was like going to take off. And The Lion King was just like this side project. Because, I mean, it does sound weird. Like, imagine if you went to someone who's like, I'm going to make a movie about lions and elephants and, you know, a monkey's going to hold up the cub in front of everyone. And then it's like a lion version of Hamlet. Like, it kind of sounds strange unless you'd seen it. And then you're like, well, it's genius. But Pocahontas is like that classic American story.
It's such an American story, isn't it? Yeah. Right. Maybe that was what they needed to know, like that it's, you know, like people don't necessarily want to see the racist beginnings of American colonization, you know? Like
in musical form.
In musical. Da 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 da. Like, it's not.
And also, I think because in Pocahontas, the villains are obviously the British, because they're invading really in that film. I wonder if that came in subconsciously. I don't know, I'm drawing a real long bow.
Yeah, they were just thinking at that time, villain equals English.
Who knows?
But then, and this is something I learnt from Miss Sunday Movies video as well, is that this is the first film that had a big star singing the key songs from the film, Elton John, who was obviously an Englishman.
Oh, yeah.
So apparently movies before that, it would be pretty anonymous sort of voice actors. But this was the first film that had a lot of star power. Also, the cast was a sort of an all-star ensemble cast.
Mm-hmm.
And that never really happened before in a Disney film. Robin Williams was in Aladdin, but it was you wouldn't have recognized any of the other names. But in this film, I just got some of the names, some of the stars. You had Matthew Broderick as adult Simba, James L. Jones as Mufasa, Jeremy Irons, as we said. Jonathan Taylor Thomas as young Simba, who was a big star at the time.
Oh, mate, JTT. Were you into JTT?
I loved him. Home Improvement?
I loved him in Home Improvement.
That's where you liked him from? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was sure you were going to say one of his other big things that he did.
Home Improvement, Home Improvement, that was it for me.
Yeah.
He was
so good.
He played,
such a babe.
I'm trying to, I remember he was like in a Christmas film. And so on and so forth.
And as Simba in The Lion King.
I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
I didn't know Matthew Broderick was adult Simba. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm. I think he was one of the early castings. And
I know.
Obviously a big
movie
star
that just keeps
90s,
on giving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What I do love, I know you touched on this before, I love how all of those animal characters have a little bit of the traits of the actors who play them. Mm. You know how Zazu looks a lot like Rowan Atkinson with the eyebrows? I think it's awesome. I love that.
Although I did just look up the voice of Nala and she doesn't look like her at all.
Oh, that's interesting.
Moira. Yeah.
I will say the female portrayal in The Lion King in general of the characters, they're all real side plots.
They are, aren't they? They are. Although Queen Bee, she's going to be taking the reins of Nala, so shit's going to change.
And Nala is actually a badass character.
She is.
She's totally
a
badass character.
Crucial character in this movie.
She is. I reckon she deserved even more airtime. Maybe she will in the new version.
They'll have to. You can't have the queen and not give her rightful heir.
Yeah.
Because, she she, in the film, she's the one who brings Simba back to, you know, save the day.
Yeah.
Back off Scar. Scar has taken over the kingdom and it has become a wasteland. What was a beautiful oasis in Africa became a wasteland. There was no life there at all. And then Simba comes back because Nala goes and accidentally finds him.
A lot of messages in this. Hey, I was just thinking that that really is a, what's the word?
Message?
No, it's like we can apply it to our own lives.
Like an analogy?
An analogy.
A metaphor?
Yes, a metaphor. That's a metaphor.
I never
for.
Know which I should know because I taught this because I was a teacher and I still am confused by the difference between analogy and metaphors.
I think because I was going to go with analogy, but I don't think it is. It's a metaphor for our own lives and over consumerism. You guys.
Right. Yes, and the environment and so many other things. I think that's what's so lovely about this film and what really touched people's hearts is that there's these sort of age-old themes of finding out who you are and taking responsibility for your life and death and life and the magical kind of circle of life that we all exist the in because we life. Become the grass and then the antelope eat the grass and then so becomes us.
I just want to hear your quoting of the movie with every single character because I'm fairly confident you know all of the lines.
Oh, mate. Oh, and all the song lyrics as well. I could. Oh, fun fact about the songs too, actually. Jeremy Irons, he sings that song we just talked about, Be Prepared. Do you know he doesn't sing all the way to the end?
No way. What does that mean?
So his voice gave out. Because you know there's that bit where he goes, you won't get a sniff without me. Yes. You know that bit?
Yes.
His voice gave out because he did it too many times and his voice just went, ugh! And so they had to get a new guy in to sing the end of the song.
Really?
Correct.
That is
correct.
A fun fact.
Yeah, so fun. May have come from Mr. Sunday Movies.
Really?
Because I live with him, but still.
A font of fun facts.
He is.
So this kind of gets us up to the meat of what we should be talking about here, the main primate character in the film, another key character, sort of a bit huge part in some ways, but really a big part, and that's Rafiki, who is kind of a baboon. Anyway.
What do you mean? He's a baboon.
He calls himself a baboon at one point. So, but he's... It's weird. He, out of all the characters, they're sort of based pretty closely, you know, cartoon versions of animals, but he's like this weird mashup of a few different primates, which is a bit strange. This is from a Screen Rant article by Andrew Dice. If you want, let me read a little for you guys.
Go on.
Yeah. Cool.
So for starters, Rafiki isn't a baboon at all. That won't be a shock to anybody who has ever searched for photos of baboons online and discovered that where Rafiki is brightly coloured, most baboons are, well, bland by comparison. Cop that, baboons, you dickheads. Oh, sorry about that. Language there.
Not in the monkey house.
Not in the monkey house, sorry. So why does Rafiki also refer to himself as a baboon in the actual movie if he doesn't resemble one? Well, the animators are partly to blame, but so is the system and science of identifying and labeling animals in the first place. So sorry if this gets a bit technical, my scientific sort of, and I should say I'm not really a scientist, but I kind of am like an amateur scientist slash primatologist. It goes on to say, to be perfectly clear, Rafiki is a mandrill, one of two species of old world monkeys in the genus Mandrillus. From a scientific perspective, the mistake in The Lion King is easy to understand. Until the late 1980s, mandrills were thought to belong to the same genus as baboons before zoologists determined the relation between the two was tenuous enough to be inaccurate. They created the genus Mandrillus to acknowledge the distinction, but the Disney animators may not have gotten the memo when crafting Rafiki the mandrill, but they probably wouldn't have cared. Oh, wow. Bit of editorializing there.
I know. Oh,
that's not unbiased at all.
I know, because I think they did a lot of work. They went to Tanzania and spent a lot of time observing animals in the wild to create. That's how they did that incredible scene at the beginning, because they did a lot of work with animals, right? So I'm surprised by that.
They also got, they got animals brought into the studio for them to study how they moved and stuff. So it is a weird oversight that this sort of key character is just not even really based on. So he's like a mandrill, but he's walks more upright, kind of more, I guess it's more humanized with a walking stick, you know, trying to make him like the old man, wise old man character. But he also has a tail, which mandrills don't have.
Which so puts him in the monkey category, I just learned.
Yeah, right. Well, pretty, yes. Don't quote me on that. But anyway, but obviously the blue face is the classic mandrill look.
Okay.
So it's, yeah, it's
a, do you think that that was maybe deliberate in that he is none of us but all of us?
Oh, maybe.
Oh,
maybe.
I like what you did there.
Yeah? Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
If you you merged all of primates together, you'd get basically a mandrill with a tail.
You would.
You would, though.
Yeah. You would.
You actually would.
And do you know what Rafiki means in Swahili? Because I used to live in Tanzania for a bit, humble brag. Yes, I did.
You've
and
lived a lot of places. Look,
I've lived a long time.
You've lived a lot of lives.
A lot longer than you, Amity. And so I know a lot more.
Amy.
I'll take that as a compliment. Yeah. She's very cool, as we discussed tonight on the show. No, Rafiki, because I spoke a bit of Swahili, means friend in Swahili. Yeah, it does. And when he sings Asante Sana Squashed Banana, you know that song?
Asante Sana Squashed Banana.
And I think it's Wewe Niu Mi Rafana, something like that anyway. I don't know the ending. But Asante Sana means thank you very much.
Thank you very much, a squashed banana.
Yeah, so he's saying thank you very much, a squashed banana. And then something like me, you, or you is me. I think that's what it means.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was a real strange scene. So that's where he sort of found Simba and he's trying to tell Simba to come back as well in the weirdest possible way.
Yeah.
Not, hey, it's cool, you didn't really kill your dad. No one thinks that. So it's very easily explained. You're a tiny baby lion.
It wasn't your fault.
It wasn't your fault. But no, instead he just was singing Squash Banana at him.
And going, correction, I know your father. And then they do the weird thing, the reflection in the water. Then he becomes his dad. And then he looks up into the sky and he sees Mufasa appear in a cloud. And Mufasa tells him all about how he's needs to go back and remember who you are.
Yeah, I remembered it being that scene being more comforting. But it was just sort of such a vague message. From his cloud dad. Hey, cloud dad lion, can spell it out for me a bit more. What do you want me to do? Remember who you are. I know who I am. What are you talking about?
I'm Simba. What do you mean? Yeah, correct. So you would prefer cloud dad to just go, hey, Simba, I know it's weird. I'm cloud dad.
Yeah.
But I'm here to tell you to go back, push Scar off a cliff.
Push him off a cliff. He did it to me. Yeah. It certainly was not your fault.
You're completely absolved of responsibility.
That's right. He doesn't even say it wasn't your fault. You didn't kill me. You were a tiny cub and it was all orchestrated by your uncle. No, he doesn't say any of that.
Maybe Simba's the one with the real Scar.
Whoa.
Yeah, sorry. Deep. Sorry to get so deep.
Whoa.
Super deep.
You're making me think.
Yeah, that's what Primates Podcast is all about. Mm. In the end, people will listen, number one, but number two, they'll think. And number three, they'll feel.
I feel a lot right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Think I get it.
Yeah.
Now that I'm in the monkey house.
Yeah. Once you get in, it's hard to get out of the monkey house.
I think I'll ever escape the monkey house.
Monkey house state of mind.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And it is like past your bedtime as well.
Yeah.
It's all going a bit crazy in here.
Yeah.
So you guys, obviously, I could tell that you were pretty disappointed finding out that it was a very inaccurate portrayal of a mandrill slash baboon. It was neither, but it was both. Mm. Well, you'll be so stoked to hear that in the preview for the new film, it's pretty clear that the director, Jon Favreau, has righted those wrongs. And I think Jon Favreau probably took it on personally because I mean, I don't know Jon Favreau personally, but I've seen him in a film, I think.
Okay.
And I reckon that's enough to know that the man cares about accuracy in primate representation in film.
Mm. No, I think that's a fair enough statement. Yes. Yeah.
So he's made Rafiki much more accurate to a mandrill in the new film.
A mandrill?
Mandrill.
They've gone with a mandrill.
Mandrill. Oh. Which is
shocking. Would have thought the baboon would have.
You would have gotten rid of the blue face.
Correct.
Right, interesting.
Mm. Yeah, no, well, I just think that he has the mannerisms of a baboon. And stop me if I'm wrong, because I don't know mandrills as well.
Right.
So I could be
mistaken. You grew up
with baboons. I, you know, I will interject here, Dimity, okay. because I've had first-hand experience with baboons.
Sure.
In fact, one stole my sandwich.
Oh.
Yes, when? Correct. When I was living, didn't I mention I'm a woman of the world?
Oh, this is when correct. I was living in the deep jungle of...
Correct, of Tanzania. Okay. And it's the savannah, as we covered. Uh-huh. The jungle is not in Africa. Or is jungle also in Africa? I'm confused.
Africa is such a big place. I reckon they probably have some jungle.
Correct. Ooh. They would definitely have some jungle. Yeah. I, in fact, went to the jungle there. I've told that story last time when I saw the gorillas.
Ooh.
I've seen quite a few primates.
No.
No.
Oh,
no, I haven't. Fun. Yeah. Yeah. They would be fun. No, like I saw the band, the gorillas, in the jungle. And
really?
I did.
Damon Albarn.
It's crazy.
Yeah, he's just hanging out there.
Jungle's mystical, isn't it?
You just
it?
Never it's know what's going to be in there. Yeah. I know. Gorillas, the band in the mist.
Oh, wow.
And it was good. It was a good time.
People say it's good. I didn't quite know why, but now
yeah,
I understand.
I mean, yeah, exactly. So anyway, where I was going with that was that baboon stole my sandwich sure. and they are very sneaky and
they're
crafty
okay.
and a bit naughty and can be a bit scary. Whereas I feel like mandrills may be more channeling of the wise wisdomness.
Right.
I reckon. I don't know for a fact. I'm just guessing.
In the David Attenborough Life episode entitled Primates that we talked about a month ago with mm-hmm. Ben Russell and Stuart Dolman, there was a scene in it with baboons and there was a fight, two groups of baboons clashing. And the way they run, they sort of run on all fours and the males have big manes. They can almost look like primate lions.
Wow. Yeah, they do because they've got big heads.
Yeah.
Like super big heads.
And yeah. they were vicious. And yeah. apparently, like the way David Attenborough explained it, some like when there's a big brawl, they'll settle old scores. Somehow he's tracked oh, that and he'll be like.
Wow. David knows. I wouldn't yeah. question it.
No,
he's wise.
He is. Yeah.
He should be Rafiki.
Correct.
David Attenborough.
Yeah. You know what else is a good one that you should probably have on the podcast? Jane Goodall. My brain just froze for a minute. There's an amazing Netflix doco on Jane Goodall.
Did you know?
Claire loves this. I've heard about this a number
She's
of times.
She's coming to Melbourne.
Oh,
is
can
she?
You being the head honcho
so
of Planet Broadcast? Do you reckon you could get her on the show?
Oh my god, I would lose my mind. I don't think so. Not the Dr. Jane Goodall in the studio.
Could you make a call though?
I could try.
That'd
Look,
be so
I am
good.
The head honcho.
You're a big boss.
I can make things happen.
You're
wear a blazer,
boss lady.
Boss
yeah,
expert.
I wear a blazer. Yeah. Exactly. I'll saunter in there. In my French wardrobe. That's a joke from another show.
Personal joke.
Personal joke.
In-joke. Enough of your
Listen to the millennials.
Joke.
I know. You'll get them all.
Exactly. Yeah, well, anyway, the doco on there is really interesting because she looks into the chimpanzees and they're like rival, tribal, mm-hmm. eating each other, settling old score. It's like very Shakespearean. Very Shakespearean.
Is it as Shakespearean as The Lion King?
No, correct. No, correct, you
is.
Are right.
I don't nothing. Think Shakespeare even could have come up with this.
Shakespeare-based, actually, this is a fact. Shakespeare, all of his plays are based on primates.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's 100% fact.
That is fascinating.
Wow. Yeah.
That is so, yeah, has to be true.
One. I Googled it.
Othello, Midsummer Night's mm-hmm. Dream.
Yeah, all
I
of them.
So
yeah.
yeah.
Different, like, obviously, it's like one's like Othello, monkeys, like King Lear. Yeah. Orangutans, like it's yeah. different.
Romeo and Juliet was actually about star-crossed spider monkeys. I was trying to say something we hadn't said today already, but I failed.
Oh,
there
you
it is.
Failed.
No, I'll admit it. I'm man enough to admit it, which is
nobody is perfect.
That's true.
Even you, man.
Man enough, as the feminist on this show, I should say that man enough to admit it feels almost like. An outdated term.
It is.
Yeah.
yeah. You should say
yeah, I don't think
human
that's
enough to admit anymore. It.
Human enough, thanks.
Primate enough to admit it, really, because aren't we all just primates
yeah.
at the
end
of the day?
I think we're lucky to call ourselves primates.
Yeah.
I feel
we're
blessed.
All prime mates.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, are you excited? You were just watching the teaser trailer.
Uh-huh.
Are you excited about the remake? I know Claire's got strong feelings about this.
I am so excited. Who isn't excited about the remake?
Well, anyone who's excited and thinks it's a great thing. I think it has divided opinion.
Well, I was going to say, when I first heard about it, I was like, do not do this. Don't like, why would you touch the Lion King? It's untouchable. You can't. No, no. However, and I've said it before, Queen Bee has really shifted the opinion from my point of view. Like, she, I trust her. I follow her.
I think the casting is so sick that it's like, yeah, that, I think that was the best thing they've done with it is the casting. I also, and I don't, I'll be interested to hear what Claire has to say about this, but I love the realistic animal animations. I haven't seen the Jungle Book remake, but I love watching a short clip of it.
Well, Claire's shaking her head.
Claire, what do you think about it?
I have so much internal rage. I have really? So much rage. Yeah, I know. I'll get into a big rant.
No, tell us.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so I really, really, really hate CGI animals. I don't like it. I think that I found this out when I went to see The Jungle Book in the cinemas, and I was really excited to see the new version of it. And then I watched it and I got so enraged all the way through it because I realized The Jungle Book must be part of my childhood somewhere, and I loved it, and the music and the animals, they're so personable. You can make animated cartoons with animals look like friendly and cool and have proper expression, but they have not managed to get CGI animals, except for maybe Planet of the Apes, but that's another story, to look kind of in the same way. Like, you can't build the kind of expression in them that you would. And I just get left a little bit cold. And every time I watch something with CGI animals, like, don't get me started on the Polar Express, you just end up going, oh, that's pretty good CGI. Instead of being like, I'm swept away by the mystical, magical world of the Lion King, all I'm thinking of is like, that elephant looks pretty good for a fake elephant. No, I'm not happy about it. And I know I love Queen Bey. I love Beyonce. And the casting, very good. But this, I just don't think this movie can be replicated. I just don't. I just don't.
It's weird when, because I think a lot of people say this is a near perfect film. For what, you know, for an animated children's film about a Lion King. People say in that genre, which is quite niche, animated family children's film about a Lion King, this is about as good as it gets.
I would go to say in just the film genre of the films,
yeah,
well, which isn't a whole genre of itself.
You've gone to the broader end of the spectrum there.
Just a bit, but I would say this is one of the greatest films of all time.
Right.
Oh, so definitely.
It's one of the classics.
So that's both why people want to remake it, but also probably the reason why it doesn't need to be remade.
Yeah, because and this is what goes to the heart of what gets my goat about all
Grind
of this.
Grind your gears.
It real does. A lot of this is a money-making thing, right? Because, of course, I will go and see this movie even though I hate CGI animals. And I just think that, yeah, obviously studios are remaking all these classic stories because all the kids that watch them are now adults and will take their kids, and it's all this wonderful thing. But come up with some new stuff. Don't keep rehashing.
I haven't thought about that.
Things.
That's a bit sad, isn't
The vast majority of those old Disney movies that we loved as kids were rehashed stories though.
I know, you make a good point there, Matthew. I know.
I reckon they should remake Snow White. I liked that one.
Didn't they make one, but she was like, very violent? She was very stabby.
Was that the one with Angelina Jolie, which was called something like, whatever the witch's name was? I forget. But I could always say.
Oh, no,
wrong.
That was Sleeping Beauty, Maleficent. Oh, okay. And actually, to be fair, I quite enjoyed that. And actually, I really liked the remake of Cinderella. I loved that. And there
were
some
very
animals
realistic,
in that.
Humans in that.
They were correct, yeah. And also the animals in that were quite good too.
Do you think that if you put to one side that it's obviously for money, it is a business as well, so it makes sense that it is about making money. But correct. If you put that to one side, the fact that kids today are going to probably appreciate more modern animation. Than older stuff. Like, I remember as a kid, I liked older movies enough, but I was way more excited about newer looking movies. You could tell
the difference. Yeah, I agree in one point, I think. But then I think that the Lion King artwork and the revamp of it, they've done the Blu-ray that's really beautiful, and the colors are so vibrant and the artwork so incredible that I think it really stands up. I don't think all of them stand up, like your Hercules's and stuff like that don't stand up in the same way with the animation. But I do think the Lion King has just such iconic imagery in it that kids just love it just as much. Right. And I mean, yeah, you're right. Kids probably will really love this CGI stuff. And I could be proven wrong. I could be proven wrong, and it could be incredible. And the casting is incredible. But I think the colors that you get in the cartoon version are so vibrant, and in the trailer, it's not as vibrant. I don't know, because I also saw the stage musical of The Lion King.
Wasn't that wonderful?
Spectacular. Mm. And what I liked about that was that they didn't even try to make the people look exactly like animals. Yeah. It was all done with art and masks and kind of following the actual movement of people. You know, even the panthers kind of had like very clever kind of puppeteering involved. Mm. And I always think puppeteering mostly in film actually comes across better than CGI, or a blend of puppeteering and CGI rather than all CGI. I
right. think
there's something like the Muppets type thing.
Yeah, like the Muppets or...
just like real. So like wasn't it the first Jurassic Park was a lot of it was actual physical.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can tell that you can, it's touchable, it's tactile, somehow.
Yeah, yeah, and they're can, actually I always in the present. It. Yeah, exactly. You want to touch it because it looks tactile, and it's almost the way that they move is a little bit different. And I think you can tell even in the first Star Wars films, you know, that's all done with that kind of puppeteering and people in costumes and model sets and that's stuff.
Part of the reason there was a lot of backlash about the prequels because they were all green screen.
Correct.
Not that I mean, there was probably a lot of reasons there was backlash about those, which I don't fully understand all that, and I would not dare.
I know, like Jar Jar Binks. I don't know what everyone hates about Jar Jar Binks. I really liked him.
He's a bit of fun.
I think he's just a little bit of fun, a light-hearted addition to the movies.
Well, yeah, you would have been probably of an age where it was designed especially for you as well, which is, but I mean, that's the point. Yeah. Like you were, older people, adults at the time who hated it, it wasn't for them. Anyway, I shouldn't get in this because this does get people pretty angry.
Yeah, it does.
But I also, I have this natural, I'm naturally drawn to things that people hate and I want to stick up for them. I can't help it. So someone like Jar Jar Binks, I'm always going to be like, or the prequels in general, I'm going to want to like.
Yeah. It's like my parents. They were going to a movie night once and they were like, I think we're going to watch Step Brothers. And I was like, I think that that's a terrible idea and you're going to hate it. And they were like, And they came back and they were like, we loved it. How funny. Space for activities, bunk beds. Maybe we should do it. Like they loved it. And I reckon it's because I was like, you're going to hate it.
Right. Yeah.
They like to be contrary.
You dared them. Basically.
I did.
I think even though I would like Jar Jar Binks, I can't. I should make that clear because
you're the only person. I'm gonna get a lot of flack. I'm gonna get flack. Well, I'm okay with it. I'll take it.
I never really get why people will jump on you for liking something. I think it's nice to be positive about stuff. Well, I find it to be nice. But obviously, there's something very satisfying about hating on stuff as well.
But it's
real short term. Whatever that good feeling you get from hating on something, I don't think it's anyway.
It's not like low GI food that sustains you for a long period
of time. It's sugary.
Yeah, correct. You'll get a
quick high and then you'll crash. Anyway, that's the end of the philosophy segment of the show.
I feel like there must be a connection between low GI and CGI, and there's just something there that I can't. My brain's too fatigued to work out. But know I was thinking about it deeply.
I quite like giving listeners the raw materials to a joke and let them assemble it at home.
It's like a deconstructed joke.
It's like the IKEA of podcasting.
Yeah, they can put it together. Yeah. There's an Allen key
there.
They
have ownership for it. It's good. I'm sorry about my negative rant, guys.
No, I wanted to know.
It was probably hard for you not to take that personally, what I just said. That's all. I wasn't even saying that.
Oh, yeah.
I find it
strange when people are negative unnecessarily.
Sorry.
It's very pointed, wasn't it?
And it's also pretty ironic that I'm being negative about negativity.
There's many layers.
So I think I'm doing exactly what I'm talking about. I do that all the time. I'll whinge about whinges. People whinge about weather in Melbourne constantly, or wherever you go, people whinge about the weather. And I often find myself whinging about the people whinging about the weather before I realize that I'm doing the exact same thing. Anyway, that brings us to the end of our Lion King chat. What we normally do is give it a banana rating out of a full bunch, whatever you think that might be. however many bananas, and then how ripe are those bananas? Are they underripe or are they open ripe? I don't understand the system, but what do you think, Claire?
Oh, for The Lion King, the animated version.
That's right.
I am going to go a 10 out of 10 banana bunch. Mm-hmm. And I think just the right amount of ripeness.
Just the ripe,
you know, like a few black spots, so you know it's sweet, but it's not overripe. It's none of that green nasty banana shit going on. Yeah,
yeah. I would get it. I don't think I've ever seen 10 bananas in a bunch, so I feel that's. I would say like 8. I think so. 8 out of 8. I don't know. And I just that each one is more perfect than the next.
Wow.
Older than the one before. Yeah.
What a magical.
Yeah. You just keep peeling and you're like, another one? This bunch is a week old. It's not even possible. But they just keep tasting delicious.
The magic of Disney, mate. Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. I hadn't really thought about this before, but I think maybe I'm going to give it a lovely bunch of coconuts.
Doodly dee, there they are standing in.
I don't know if that fully makes sense, but I'm sticking with it. The other thing we do.
As big as your head.
I was going to say, if you could keep laying down that musical bed. I'll just keep talking over that beautiful bed of music. Musical bed. Of the musical.
Ah, some caught in a loop here.
The other thing we do is we talk about the main primate character in the film and how much of ourselves we see in that character. So apparently on the first episode, scientist Andy Matthews told us that chimpanzees or chimpanzees and humans share 99% or 98% DNA. I'm regretting that. And
I'm sorry, what did you say?
98% DNA we shared with chimpanzees. How much of yourself do you see in Rafiki in The Lion King as a percentage out of 100? 100 is the full amount of percents that we can give DNA-wise.
I wish there was more.
I know. Well, I'm sorry.
Anything that I say is going to be, I feel like, too full of myself.
Oh, wow. So because you think of Rafiki as being great.
Yeah, I think, well, obviously. Yeah. If I was like, oh, well, obviously I'm Rafiki, that is saying that I am like the knower of all things in the universe.
Right.
That's a big statement.
That is true.
But you are in front of like the feminist of the podcast, and true. He would say to you, I'm sure, Matt, I'm just reading your mind here, that you should back yourself.
Back yourself. That's what I was thinking,
I am 100% of
Rafiki.
Wow. Yes.
That's amazing.
To ask me anything. I'll tell you.
Down to the limp and the walking stick.
Yeah.
That is real cool. And your blue face.
Yeah, I'm blue in the face.
And your tail.
Thank goodness this is an auditory medium because I could be.
Well, no, you could be. You are.
I am. So, yeah, ask me anything. I'll give you advice, a wisdom.
Claire. Mm. Claire asks big questions.
Ooh. Okay. Should I keep singing I've Got a Lovely Bunch of Coconuts?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Look up into the stars. Squash banana.
Yep.
Laptop.
God, it's like he's here with us.
Yeah, I think you know what to do.
There's a lot to take away from that.
There's so much. There's so much to take away.
He gives so much and so little all at the same time.
I'm remembering who I am, and it feels good.
Good.
Thanks, Rafiki.
You're welcome.
Are you that high, 100%? I mean, did sound a bit high there. Are you a similar amount of high?
Oh, look, I think that Dim has really proved that she is the embodiment and spirit of Rafiki in her wisdom.
Question's kind of changed now. It's as a percentage, how much of yourself do you see in Dimity?
Oh, I like that.
I like this a lot. Okay. I would say, I was going to say like maybe 80%, but then I realized she has really long feet and I don't have as long a feet. My feet are quite dainty and beautiful. So, you know, it's one of the gift, many gifts that I have. So I'm going to go with 70%.
Before I 100% identified with Rafiki, that would have been a really, I would have taken that quite personally, that comment. But now I'm above it and actually I'm not affected at all. So
cool.
Yeah.
She's basically saying 30% less good than you.
What you'll find is if you look into yourself, you'll find the answer.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I'll just leave you with that.
I normally would say a number myself, but I feel like I could just, could you tell me how much of myself I see in you?
I'm so confused at this point.
I think nearly everyone will start doing rating systems like this eventually. We're ahead of the curve.
Yeah. You are. Well, you are a scientist.
Yeah. Well, basically.
Primatologist.
Yeah. I give you 10 bananas.
10 bananas. Thank you.
Oh, you're so wise. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to start calling you Rafiki.
Okay.
I think you should live in a tree from now on.
I'd really like that.
Yeah.
I think I would get a good perspective on life.
You would. Baobab trees. They're very roomy. You know, they're those really big, broad ones.
Such beautiful trees.
They are.
I've never been to Africa. I feel like a real bloody loser.
A nincompoop.
Yeah, I'm going to get there. I can't wait to get there. Dave Warnicky from the Do Go On podcast, I do. You know him.
I know him. He's, I know that guy.
We were planning. We're going to go over maybe next year or something, we reckon.
Wow.
I know in Africa is a very big place.
Yeah, we're just going to go to Africa.
We're
going
to go to Africa.
Go to Tanzania. That's where we lived. And it's beautiful. It's where the Lion King set.
Oh.
Yeah, it's where they went. So a lot of the scenery that you see there in Ngorongoro Crater and Kilimanjaro, we climbed Kilimanjaro, is there in Tanzania.
All right, Claire's lived a great life, you guys.
Look, can you remember?
With my tiny feet.
I cannot remember a conversation we've had where you didn't mention Kilimanjaro and how you climbed it.
Oh, my God, all I ever hear about.
The way you're able to weave it into every conversation.
It's remarkable.
Do you want a tea? A tea? That reminds me. That brings us to everyone's favourite segment on the show. It's the primate sporting mascot segment of the show. Dim, you would have heard about this, I'm sure. Last week we talked about, well, if you haven't figured it out from the title, it's where we talk about a primate-based sporting mascot from around the world. When I started the show 20-odd weeks ago, I thought there would be more than there are, but it seems like if anyone is about to start a sporting team, and I know a lot of people out there are, maybe you're going to start an indoor soccer team or a netball team. Give yourself a primate name. And even if you can go with something more interesting than gorillas or something, that'd be great. And let us know. And we can bloody feature on the show. And that's everyone's dream. I know that. Mm. I know that to be true. But this week, it's a bit of a follow-up from last week where we talked about the Warilla Gorillas. Warilla's a suburb or a town just outside of Wollongong in New South Wales. They've got a rugby league team called the Gorillas. And obviously, if you're called Warilla, apart from maybe chinchillas, I think gorillas is your only real option. I wasn't sure. I could not figure out who had suggested it to me. I was searching everywhere. But I found out during the week that it was Scott W. Clowry, a great listener of the show, and he got in touch again this week to let me know that not only does Warilla have a rugby league team called the Gorillas, they also have a lawn bowls club known as the Warilla Gorillas. And they've got a big statue, which I found on their Facebook page. They've got a big gorilla statue made, and they opened it up to a competition to name it, and there's 250 comments, and the winner with the most likes was Garrett the Gorilla, which I don't know what that means. I think it's some sort of in thing. Maybe some key member of the club's name was Gary Garrett or something like that. And that beat out other suggestions, including the most frequent suggestion. I can't believe I didn't pick it. Was Harambe, which I think would have been a beautiful.
Oh, that's a fun name.
Would have been a beautiful gesture.
It would have been.
That's the one that died, isn't it?
Yeah, it was one of the ones that died. A lot of gorillas have died over the journey. But
So that's not really a fun one.
No,
then.
It's a bit sad.
I
didn't
know that. I mean, it's more of a tribute.
Yeah,
Yeah, like a meaningful one. Yeah,
meaningful tribute. Yeah. So
I think we should all have a moment's silence.
Sure.
Rafiki, you are correct. Mm. Yeah, she's so wise. Mm.
You talk right through that moment, but and you'll never get it back.
I think we both respected it.
We did, certainly, yes. I had a very, very great moment of introspection. Mm. I'm going to do a full episode on Harambe eventually, which I'm looking forward to learning more about, the legend that is Harambe. But I'm so keen to get up there. You can. There's a photo on the Wirralla Gorillas Facebook page of the gorilla now known as Garrett, and its hand is put out, which is sort of like it's like you can put things in it for photos. And the photo they've got has got like a tiny baby sitting by itself on the. I'm gonna go up there and I'm gonna lie on it on Garrett's hand.
Oh,
and take
that's
a photo.
A good idea.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Hey, Dim. Yeah. Now it's time for everyone's favorite segment
I
of the show.
Last
no,
was
Dim,
a
please don't. Please
superseded
don't.
Only by this segment.
It's Circus Watch. It's where we talk about Andy Circus, who is sort of the godfather of this podcast. He's the patron saint. He's played the greatest apes on screen, including Caesar in the Planet of the Apes reboots, and also King Kong, which is probably only bettered by Caesar in terms of on-screen kings. Caesar meaning king, apparently. So each week we try to catch up. If anyone listening knows Andy Serkis or has seen Andy Serkis or knows someone who's seen Andy Serkis, please get in touch to the email address primatespod@gmail.com with the, what do you call the line where you've got a description of the thing? What's that called, Ian?
Oh, the show notes. Oh, no, the episode description. I don't know.
The subject line. The subject line.
Yeah. Oh, it's like email. The subject, right?
Oh, yeah.
You are such a podcast person. Your head's always in the pod game.
It is. My head started to leave the building.
The head honcho. Anyway, yes. The subject line.
Sorry.
Circus Watch, and give us your stories. We've had a few great stories in the past. We want to get them on the show eventually. I did a quick Google in the Google News search and found out that he was recently talking to the new paper, or the newspaper, about his new film Mowgli, which is launching today, I think, as this episode goes out on Netflix. And in it, he talked about playing the role of the bear Baloo. And this totally goes to what you were saying before. I don't think you're probably going to love this movie, Claire, based on what you're saying before. But he was saying, Circus was saying, that it proved to be a little more difficult than any member of the primate family, which is quite used to playing, obviously, apart from the fact that primates are superior animals to bears and all others. He said translating the actor's facial expressions into a non-humanoid face was the most difficult. Take the character like Gollum, who we played as well in the past. My facial structure is similar to his, but if you're looking into the face of a bear, a wolf, or a tiger, it is completely different structurally. We had to design the animals very carefully so that you could see the actors' faces in them. So maybe there's some hope that the technology is coming on, and I think our man Andy Serkis is the one who's going to bring that forward.
He's championing it. I do have a lot of respect for the old Andy Serkis and his work. He's very talented. Maybe he can bring it home. I'm very skeptical.
It's because when he played Caesar, he's got a chimpanzee's face, which already is going to be able to be a lot more expressive. So it's going to be interesting to see how he's been able to make a bear's face look like a bear but also express human-type emotions.
Yeah.
What's that called when you put human emotions onto something that's not human?
Humotioning.
You're a scientist, so I believe you.
Well,
not a scientist. Just like
I'm
pretty much
a scientist.
Primatologist.
I'm an amateur primatologist and basically a scientist.
Correct. Yeah, but you definitely nailed that. That's what it is. Yeah. I know there is a word, but I can't think of the word.
Sorry. It's late and my brain's not working. Obviously, I'm a linguist as well, and I just wanted to let you guys have a chance. I shouldn't say guys. You people have a chance to step in there. Sorry, as a feminist of the podcast, I would really like to apologize for using guys.
I call girls guys, Lee.
I'm okay with it, yeah. As a feminist, I'm okay with it.
Okay, cool. Well, and you are the font of all wisdom.
I know everything. I hereby decree. Can I make decree? I don't think Rafiki does decrees.
No, I don't think. Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, you
are. But I will, because I make the rules.
Yeah.
So, guys, it's okay.
It is okay. Well, I have a feeling that it. Anyway, who bloody knows? But it definitely is. It's a contentious one at the moment. I've seen coming up a little bit, and I'm not taking the piss at all. I'm trying to say that less. But I'm finding now that I've tried to stop saying it.
Yeah, you say
that.
It
I
more
say
like,
it so much. I just wouldn't have noticed it before. But I say it. It's my go-to.
Yeah. I think I probably say it a lot too.
I'm trying to get onto folks.
Oh, that's a good one.
But it's way more clumsy. What do you folks think? What do you guys think? What do you folks think?
What does everyone think? Oh. What about everyone?
Everyone. Absolutely. Yeah. Vanessa Amorosi style. Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone. Everyone. Yeah. I love how inclusive that song is.
Yeah, it is very inclusive. That was the key praise.
A beautiful message. Yeah. And I praise it too. Anyway, that brings us to everyone's favourite segment on the show, which is the Patreon shout-outs. If you do like this show, it's part of a mini network inside of a much bigger and better network, the Planet Broadcasting Network. But the mini network's called the Do Go On Network or something like that. I don't even know what it's called. But on Patreon, you can find it at patreon.com/dogoonpod. And if you support this show, you'll also be supporting Do Go On Podcast and also Dave Warnicki's podcast Book Cheat, which is where he reads a classic novel, so you don't have to. Very funny podcast you should check out as well. But one of the rewards you can get, apart from bonus episodes and other things like that, is I'll read out your favorite primate on the show. And here are four patrons' favorite primates. Here is Will White's. His is the silverback gorilla. And he says that's simply because it's one of the few animals on the planet that can both learn to understand you and yet rip both your arms off at the same time. That's why.
That's a good reason.
That's a beautiful.
I wouldn't argue. No one can argue with that.
No, you can't argue with that.
No,
yeah,
that's true.
That's why. I mean, yeah. If Rafiki wasn't sitting in the room, I'd say maybe that Will White has the wisdom of a Rafiki. Nick Vidrosa says Optimus Primal from Beast Wars is his favorite, which we talked about in an earlier episode. He's a Transformer series where they turned into animals. He was the leader. Optimus Primal became a gorilla. He says, it was my first taste of Transformers and started an unhealthy love for the franchise. Is there such a thing as an unhealthy love of Transformers? The answer is yes.
Yeah, I think there might be.
Definitely yes. Mm. There's no doubt about that. Rachel Razzie says her favorite is hands down a gorilla. She said her favorite monkey is hands down a gorilla. I'm going to let that slide because gorillas aren't monkeys. Pretend I didn't even bring it up.
Do you know my favorite thing is Rachel Razzie's name? That's cool.
That is a sick name, isn't it? Name. Such a cool name.
Very
Rachel
well
Razzie.
Done, Rachel Razzie's parents.
That's alliteration. Yeah. I love alliteration.
You so are a good teacher at heart, aren't you?
Yeah, I know.
Can it's take her out of the school.
Yeah, but you can't take the school out of the person.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody agrees with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. Is it personified? Is that the word you're saying? No, it's not quite. No, close.
No. It's like
anthropomorphizing.
Is it?
Something like that.
Yes, it is. It definitely
is. I mean, I'm sitting right here on a computer, but I refuse to
look at it. No, I don't want to. I could look at it. I don't want
to. I'd much prefer to get too many tweets about it this week. No, please tweet in if you want to. So Rachel Razzie, who I'm sure is an alter ego of a superhero, says her favorite's a gorilla part. Partially because the babies are super cute, but primarily due to the fact that my sister is terrified of them and cried once when she saw one at Taronga Zoo, which is another beautiful reasoning there to love gorillas. And finally, Gregory Gritman, which is another alliterative name.
Oh, great name.
It's a fantastic name. His favorite is the proboscis monkey.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
His reasoning is because look at them. And I think you can't argue with that.
No, you can't.
Have you seen
them? One, Gregory.
They're fantastic.
I think I have.
They look like they've got a cock and balls on their face.
Yes. Yep. It's ringing an absolute bell.
Absolute bell.
They're amazing looking. Bells of the balls. They don't look real. They look like they were invented by Jim Henson. Totally.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Google them after this.
Well, that pretty much brings us to the end of the episode. Now, where can people find you, everyone?
primates.
Well, you can find me on your podcast apps at The Millennial Divide. It's difficult to spell. We learned after we named it. So it's M-I, two L's, tricky, E, two N's, also tricky, I-A-L divide. And we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook.
And I'll put links to some of that in the description. But you could also find it if you just want to quickly look it up on the Planet Broadcasting website.
Correct. Yeah, you can go to planetbroadcast.com where you will find this podcast and your podcast and all some
every podcast you need
podcasts
to listen to.
Correct. Exactly. And you can find me. I host another podcast called Just Make the Thing, which is a show about how to start a thing, keep on making it. And there are episodes with Matthew, who is here, and also with Dave Warnocky from Do Go On and Jess Perkins, and lots of other great interviews and just chats about creativity. And I'm also on Instagram at Claire20 and on Twitter at Mrs. Sunday Movie. So head on over and find me there.
It's actually pronounced Claire Tonti.
Tonti, exactly.
And you're doing a live episode of Just Make the Thing with a few of these people we just talked about. It's about a week away.
Yeah, oh goodness, it is. It's next week. Oh my God. So it's on the 9th of December at the Howler Bar in Brunswick. And it's going to be Just Make the Thing live with Mr. Sunday Movies himself, my husband man, and Jess Perkins, Dave Warnocky, another great girl called Cleo Karama. She makes donuts, so we're going to be selling donuts for all for charity. Yeah, they're Italian donuts with jam. They're amazingly delicious. Oh, my goodness. She makes them as a side hustle, and so she's going to be talking about side hustles and how she got her business off the ground. And it's also with my co-host, Chanel Luchev. She's awesome too. And, yeah, tickets are available on MoshTix, and I'll give you that link as well. Cool.
That is an all-star cast.
I
keep checking my emails. Haven't seen an invoice on there, but that's an invoice on there.
Invoice.
Oh, this is awkward.
Maybe you're searching for the wrong thing. It's invite.
Yeah.
Oh.
Try invite.
Okay, that might change everything.
Yeah, you could
I'm
find
so
it.
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, this
RSVP
is awkward.
I'll RSVP real soon. No, I think we'll actually be, both of us will be heading back from Meredith.
Yeah. You're gonna be at the music festival, and silly me for making it on that weekend.
Oh,
that
was
very silly.
Because
Meredith
totally
is
totally
so cool.
Your key market as well. All your listeners. We'll be at Meredith.
I know. I'm so silly. Anyway, if you're not at Meredith, come along to Just Make the Thing. And we're also fundraising for Care Australia. So $5 from every ticket goes to Care Australia for supporting women and girls who live in extreme poverty around the world. So another cool thing that we do at Planet Broadcasting is raise money. So cool.
I'm super jealous that I won't get to be there, but I'm looking forward to listening to it. People who want to find Primates on social media, it's at PrimatesPod, PRIMEMATESPOD on Twitter and Instagram, and Primates on Facebook, similar to Millennial Divide. Making a pun thing on an audio format was real dumb. Anyway, Primates, I guess you can read it on your phone right now, PrimatesPod@gmail.com. If you can, I'd love it if you could give us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever. Apparently, I've been told by people like Claire Tonti that it's really important to get the podcast out there, something about algorithms or something. Give us a 5-star review. You can be real honest with the words you write. If you think it's a 4-star podcast or a 3-star, that's fine. Give me 5 stars and then in the message say, honestly, probably only 4 stars, but I thought I'd do you a favor. And I really appreciate that. It would mean so much. I love reading those when they trickle in and they make me feel real good about myself. And in the end, isn't that
what
podcasting
is
all about? Boosting my fragile ego.
I know. That's why I'm in the game, yeah.
Now, I don't know who – normally one of the guests will do the classic sign-off, which is just something you riff at the time that's Primates-based. Who's feeling it? Dim, I think you've got something. So I'll say thank you so much for coming, Claire. People should definitely check out your live show next week.
Thanks, Matt.
And we'll talk soon. We'll get you back in for another Disney sometime. And you both should come back for when the remake comes out as well.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming in, Dimity. And as we always say on Primates Podcast,
we're signing out of the monkey house.
So good. You did it.
It wasn't good. I'm sorry. I need time to think of these
that
things.
That was so good.
I'm actually really funny if you give me a few more minutes.
You are really funny. It's very stuffy in
okay.
here.
Yeah. I'll do better next time I'm on. Just
You're
bring
right.
me back. I've got it. I'll have it down next time.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.